This is Human Rights.
Okay, it's July 3rd, 2002. And could you tell us your name and also the organization that you were down in Columbia with?
With the recent advances in Daniel Brito, and I went to Columbia with Witness. You might think that the
public is okay, and what dates were you there? Right, approximately?
We left for Miami on the 9th. We had about a day and a half training there, and then left on the 11th for Bogota, and we came back on the 20th of March.
Okay, and you said that you were in the area where Occidental Petroleum is right now.
That's right.
You said that there currently is active work going on to protect that area and to protect the pipeline. Could you tell us, were there any problems with the people who were living there? That was there any suffering as a result of the actions that were going on?
Right, there's definitely suffering going on there as a result of the attention being paid to the resources, the natural resources that are there. The people that we met with basically told us that it's a very rural area, and in Colombia, the federal government has never really been entirely in control of all parts of the area. And so this has been a particularly outlying area where there's been basically no government interest in providing resources for the people or in the area at all up until 1980 when they discovered oil there.
The International Criminal Court is the first permanent international court authorized to try criminals who commit the most serious international crimes, such as genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes, as defined in its treaty. It acts when national...
That's one problem there. The main problem for the people, though, is that the 18th Brigade is based in Arauca. The 18th Brigade is the brigade that would receive this $100 million to protect the pipeline if Bush's proposals go through. The 18th Brigade is headed by a man named Carlos Lemos Barraza, who is a graduate, of course, of the U.S. Army School of the Americas. And the 18th Brigade, according to the Arauca chapter of the National Campesinos Association, is responsible for the killing of about 300 unarmed civilians since July of 2001. This is a unit with a relatively good human rights record compared to other parts of the Colombian Army. And in 1998, there was a particular incident called the Santo Domingo Massacre, which was very near to the province of Saravena, where we visited. In this incident, 11 people, a total of 18 people were killed, including 7 children. And this was a case where the Colombian Air Force bombed a home and said that it was a rebel base or some usual cover story like that. And in this particular incident, Occidental Petroleum Airspace Control System, Skymaster, was actually used. They provided the technology and the targeting information for the Air Force, Colombian Air Force fighter who actually dropped the bomb. Subsequent investigation, including a forensic study by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, established that the actual bomb that was dropped was itself made in the United States. And so the people of Iraq are definitely suffering already because of the interest of the United States and the international oil conglomerates in the resources that happens to be under their land.
And you're saying that it sounds like direct involvement by the Colombian military that are enforcing this?
Yeah, the Colombian Army is generally involved in counterinsurgency operations in the area. It's an outlying area, and so it has a reputation of being kind of rebellious. And there is a history of strong rebel activity in the area. So the Colombian Army is already very active in counterinsurgency operations, general intimidation of the population, and things like that.
But you said that the Colombian government themselves doesn't have a direct involvement or a governing presence in that area.
Right. That's true. There's very little signs of government presence there. There's roads and everything, but pretty much the only representative of the government there is the Army.
So basically the Army is the group that is in charge and controlling this area then?
Right, there are elected officials. Right now, actually, it's been quite a story that actually made the New York Times that all throughout Arauca, the largest rebel group called the FARC, the Revolutionary Air Force of Colombia, has actually declared to all of the mayors and all of Arauca that if they don't leave by a certain deadline, that they will be declared military targets and be treated as such, and basically a thinly veiled death threat if they don't resign or leave. And so right now, that's the state of government in Arauca, is that every single elected mayor in the department is under a death threat from the rebels.
So the elected officials are kind of caught really in between the FARC that's supplying threats, but also the Colombian military is providing a forceful presence as well. Is there the people in caught between these two forces?
That's usually the way it's described, is that, you know, the Colombian people are caught between these three sides. Which it's true that there is a certain level of callousness and indifference among some particular fronts of the rebel groups, but that doesn't really give you, that can be kind of misleading, because the 80%...
The Dutch foreign minister has made an official complaint against the act.
These are basically just mercenaries hired by drug lords, large landowners, or subsidized directly by the Colombian army to do the kinds of operations that the army just doesn't have the morale or to do, or just doesn't want to do for risk of harming its reputation.
So this would be like the third force, you said, when they're caught between three sides?
Right, there's the Colombian army, there's the two main rebel groups, the FARC and the ELN, or the National Liberation Army, and
established and emerging democracies voted for the court, with only seven voting against, notably Iraq, China, and the United States. To further distance themselves from the reaches of the ICC, on June
18th,
urged the United Nations Security Council to exempt peacekeeping operations from the jurisdiction of the court. On July 3rd, the Security Council rejected the U.S. proposal. Previously, the U.S. had unsuccessfully exempted peacekeepers in
East Timor. So you could actually see a connection between the paramilitary groups and the support of them by the Colombian military?
Attempting to block payment to the U.N. unless they agree not to prosecute Americans through the ICC. The U.S. Congress is now discussing a future bill linking U.N. payments and the court.
And this meeting was convened by the Colombian military, specifically at their request. The large drug dealers, when they started to amass large fortunes, looked for something to invest that money in, and they settled on becoming large landowners, which gave them something to invest their money in and also gave them a kind of social status. And then as the fortunes increased, they came under, they started having to pay out ransoms to the guerrillas who were kidnapping them. They also had to pay revolutionary taxes, you know, to the guerrillas that were operating in the area, and they began to resent the kidnappings and the taxes, and decided that they would hire their own self-defense forces. And this is to a large degree where the paramilitaries have their origins. And so, in 1981, this particular meeting happened where this organization, MAS, Death of Kidnappers, was formed. And Jorge Ochoa of the Medellin clan was elected treasurer. The president of this organization was a man named Jorge Ocampo, and he was a known associate of Juan Ramon Mata Ballesteros, who was a known Class 1 DEA violator, that's a kingpin. And Mata Ballesteros was himself given a State Department contract in the 1980s to fly so-called humanitarian supplies to the Contra mercenaries that the U.S. was then subsidizing. So that gives you a general idea of some of the connections, some of the origins of the paramilitary movement, that it's intimately connected with the army, with organized crime in the form of the narco traffickers, and with a lot of the same operatives that we have seen in U.S. Black operations throughout Latin America going back into the 80s and even the 70s.
So it sounds like there's a definite chain of connections between these events. I was wondering, would you or did you or any of your group were able to evidence or actually observe any evidence of the killings, disappearances, kidnappings, and general human rights abuses there?
Right. While we were there, it's difficult to speak of certain specific threats against certain officials because in some cases you might put them in greater jeopardy by mentioning specific threats against them, because the people who made the threats may try and retaliate for the person talking about what happened to them. But definitely, we were constantly aware while we were in the rural areas that words can kill. Rumors are fatal, can be fatal throughout Colombia. But in this particular area, we witnessed for ourselves the level of collaboration between paramilitary and the Colombian army, because we went out to the outskirts of town where the slums are, and there's a road leading out of town, and on one side of the road is the Colombian army base, and on the other side of the road, literally across the street, is where everybody knows the paramilitary base to be. And this is something that I had read about before in reports from various organizations, from Human Rights Watch, even from the U.S. State Department, saying that there's this level of collaboration between the Colombian army and the paramilitary, such that, you know, in particular cases where the commanding general can see the paramilitary base from his window, things like that. So I read about these things, but I also actually saw them for myself. It's right there. It's that clear as day. They're across the street from each other.
And the United States also has interest in this area. You're talking a little bit about that. Could you see evidence of U.S. support of either of these groups?
Could you repeat the last part of that?
Could you see evidence of U.S. support of either of these groups?
Not on the ground for myself, but we know that one of the... There were three counter-narcotics battalions formed under the funding from Plan Colombia, which Bill Clinton initiated.
Excuse me a second.
The 18th Brigade, which patrolled the Belga. While we were there, some of the people that we spoke with insisted that they had seen 40 U.S. Marines disembark in late 2000 directly onto the Occidental compound there. And I tried to follow up on that and check the stories out of others and say, do you think this actually happened? Could this really have happened? Because people were quite adamant. They said, we saw 40 U.S. Marines go on to the field. And the main response was, well, it seems very unlikely, because the political reaction, if you know, covert operations were being conducted without public knowledge here, if, you know, if U.S. troops were to be there and it were to come out like that, it would be very embarrassing to the government. So people seem to think, well, no, it probably didn't happen, because it would be so embarrassing if it came out. But that doesn't really mean that it didn't. And the people that saw this were quite adamant about what they remember seeing.
Cool. Thanks for sharing this with us. I just have one final question. Recently, there's been a lot of talk about international accountability for abuses and violence such as this through the International Criminal Court. The treaties defined war crimes as crimes against populations. I was wondering if you're familiar with this, because you mentioned that you've gotten information from Human Rights Watch. And did you see evidence of such crimes that would fall under such jurisdiction?
Yeah, there's, everyone we met with basically had some kind of evidence to offer us about massacres that had been conducted there. The violence is pervasive throughout the country. There's almost a massacre every day, basically, in one or another part of the country. But as far as the International Criminal Court goes,
and the National Liberation Army, or ELN, the major paramilitary groups are allied under the name United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, or OCC, led by Carlos Castaño. Dan Brito describes the OCC.
The right-wing paramilitaries, which are mainly organized under a group called AUC, or the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, headed by a man named Carlos Castaño. And he was a former associate of Pablo Escobar, and actually is quite proud of his role in eventually tracking down and killing Pablo Escobar.
The United States has been accused of supporting the Colombian military to protect U.S. interests in the region. On the most basic level, the U.S. funds the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, formerly known as the School of the Americas.
So the International Criminal Court definitely could make a great contribution in ending the impunity, the culture of impunity in Colombia. And this applies not just to political crimes. Actually, the murder rate is the highest in the world in Colombia, and the impunity rate is somewhere above 95%. I would say more than 95%. In more than 95% of murders, no one is ever prosecuted or punished.
You've given us a lot of information in a very short period of time, and I'm sure there's a lot more. What would you recommend for people who are interested in finding out more about what is going on in Colombia?
Well, first of all, Witness for Peace would be a great place to start. Their website is www.witnessforpeace.org, and they're just a fantastic organization, and a lot of good information that they have to give to people. I just recently found a new book called Killing Peace by Gary M. Leach, and you can find it. It's for sale online at www.columbiareport.com, and it gives a very good overview of the conflict. Also, there's a website now called Narco News, www.narconews.com, which does a very good job of exposing some of the links between, for example, the president-elect of Colombia and the narco chapters and the right-wing paramilitaries, and just the kinds of information that you're not going to find anywhere else. So those are three very good sources to start with.
Okay, people in the Tucson area, is there a telephone number they can call locally?
In Tucson, there's right now, there's a loose affiliation of people concerned about Colombia and a very loose Colombia solidarity group. Probably the main contact on this would be the